This is Rob Peary with the Coffee Runs Deep podcast, where we interview coffee farmers, coffee roasters, and we share their stories. Truly hope you enjoy the experience. What's going on, everyone? We have a unique episode today. My guest is no stranger to the podcast world. Chris DeFerio is the creator of the Keys to the Shop podcast, and he dropped some value in this episode. We discuss everything from buying a coffee shop versus building one out, what the biggest issue he sees in coffee shops that fail, and he gives some great advice on consulting and the importance of having a plan for your roastery or cafe. I will say I was a little nervous speaking with Chris, as he is a leader in the coffee podcast industry, so I apologize ahead of time if I got a little tongue-tied or windy. Hope you enjoy. Welcome to the Coffee Runs Deep podcast. I'm your host, Rob Peary, and today we have a guest that had an impact on the beginning of my journey. He has a podcast you may have heard of, Mr. Chris DeFerio. How do you say your last name again?
That's perfect. You did it well.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
DeFerio.
Mr. Chris DeFerio with Keys to the Shop. So, Chris, how you doing, dude?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on, man. Yeah, heck, it's great. How are you?
Pretty good. So what all exactly do you do? I know you do the consulting and I know you do the podcast, but like, what does that all entail? How does like kind of a day look?
A day can be usually is pretty packed with just trying to stay ahead of production schedule for the podcast, with guests being, you know, scheduled for interviews, or I'm editing shows, I'm recording my own, you know, solo episodes or shift breaks, which are exclusively me. The shift break is the short format episodes on Thursdays. So we do, for those in the audience that don't know about Keys to the Shop, it's, you know, been 5 years of running. Basically it started as a episode every week and then an extra one on the end of the month, called Founder Fridays. And that lasted for a little bit until I introduced the shift breaks on Thursdays, which was a short 10-minute episode. And so now we do 10 episodes per month. When you count all of the different types of episodes we do now, and recently, including Rate of Rise, which is part in partnership with Roast Magazine. So it's all roasting focused episodes. So that gives me a lot to think about every week. It's rare that I have my production calendar actually out a few weeks. It's usually shorter than that. So it's all me doing it behind the scenes at this point. There's no team or anything. That might change in the future, but for right now, that's the way it is. And besides just doing that, and you know, that involves a lot actually when you talk about like next week, we're talking with somebody that is a professional in crisis counseling and de-escalation. So you got to come up with questions about that particular subject, as well as interviewing on the same day, I'm interviewing Lance Hedrick. So it's like your brain has to jump from subject to subject and figure out the format a little bit. And we like to keep it conversational, but also have some guidelines for the conversation. So it's pretty focused. Then consulting, you know, when I take on clients, it's a relationship. And so when you've got several clients at once, you know, you're at different phases of the project, whether it's just starting off in coffee, somebody that's, you know, I have a client opening for the first time next week, that's their soft open. And then there's someone who already has a coffee shop and has had it for over a decade that is simply signing on for consulting to help improve what is existing now and bring that to the next phase. So it requires a lot of like time blocking, which I'm not the best at. So it's a challenge to stay up to date with it, but it keeps me busy pretty much all day. Yeah, that's what I do right now. I feel like barista work in my career has really prepared me to just kind of embrace the suck of work a little bit.
Yeah, I hear that. It's like, I don't know, you see like Keys to the Shop and you think there's like a team and everything behind it, you know? So it's just you doing all of this then, correct? You don't have like a...
Just me where you see me sitting here right now.
That's so cool to actually hear though, because it's like a lot of people like overthink a lot of this stuff. And it's like, you think you're going to need some big production team and like audio engineers and all this equipment. And you really don't, you know, you can kind of just start something like in a little office space. So that's one of the coolest
things. You need consistency. That's the thing. Consistency. If you early on, you know, I would have to take a drive. Like if I got a week away from an episode deadline and I didn't know what I was going to do, I had to drive. I had to put music on. I had to go into like manufacture a real creative space to figure something out. And these days, if I get to the same point, I'm pretty sure I've got enough thoughts on it since I've been thinking about it for 5 years, you know, several episodes a month. It's a skill that you acquire, a recall skill that you acquire. And I'm talking particularly about solo episodes or shift breaks and things like that, but even just subject matter content. I think retail coffee, which is where my podcast is aimed, and roasters, there are so many complexities involved in the production of something, what seems to be really simple, like a roastery or a coffee shop. And so at first you think, well, how do you even continue to put content out there? And you just have to take the next step and say, I know there's something beyond this. I know there's something there that's deeper or relevant. And I haven't been wrong yet about, you know, there being something else, but who knows? You know, give it another 5 years. We may run out of things to talk about.
And that's the thing too. It changes so quickly. Like, you know, what's being added to the market and different ways to market stuff like that. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't know there may always be something to kind of talk about. Cause I have that issue too with my YouTube, not so much with the podcast. I feel the podcast is like, you know, I can get somebody on and kind of just talk and like, you know, talk my way through it or whatever. But like with the YouTube, it's like, sometimes I'll get stagnated where it's like, it's almost like that, you know, I want to do so many ideas. So then it'll take me 3 or 4 weeks to decide which one I want to do. And so that really hurts my YouTube channel. Cause it's like, if I'd have just picked one and just made it, you know, go to the second, kind of schedule it out. That's something that kind of gets me on YouTube. And that's why sometimes I just will go 3 or 4 or 5 weeks without uploading an actual YouTube video.
Yeah.
Just scheduling that time out, blocking it off. That's a huge thing. What do you prefer, doing the podcast or consulting? Like what kind of makes you more excited today?
Wow. I'm really not sure how to answer that question. To cop out and say it's both, I'd say it's both. I think there is a certain sense of satisfaction that's different for each one. The whole point of Keys to the Shop has always been, whether it's the podcast or consulting, to bring about a certain form of clarity through installing and highlighting best practices to sort of pull the signal from the noise of the industry, which is, you know, after 22 years, that's how long I've been in coffee. The noise is a lot louder today when you think about media and resources. And so if I'm talking to somebody on a podcast and I say, look, here are some things that you need to think about when you're hiring staff, or what about you as a leader? What are some things that you're doing that are kind of secretly sabotaging your business with your staff and your profitability and things like that? If I can state those things in a podcast, I reach people where they are globally, which is crazy. You know, 170 some odd countries listen to the show. And if I'm talking one-on-one with somebody, it is that, but it's also deeper, because now if we have like a scheduled consulting call, which is usually where a lot of my clients start, is every other week, hour or so, we talk about the project or Q&A or whatever is on the docket, right? That conversation will dig into things for that context that I could never cover with an episode, because an episode, it has to be relatively general, right? I like to make it specific enough to have teeth to it, that it's got content that you're like, man, that's what I need. There's a lot of platitudes out there about hiring and leadership and stuff, but this was contextually appropriate and it helped me. But then being able to help people even deeper, because your context requires just more exploration, right? So if I was helping you specifically, Rob, like you might have benefited from an episode about hiring. We'll use that one again. But it's different when you and I get to sit down and talk about your values, what you're looking for in a person, what your role in the organization is, what strengths they have to have versus yours. That can't be done in a podcast. So they perform different functions to the same goal, in my mind.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. It's like kind of like that synergies thing where one is going to benefit the other. And I feel, mm-hmm. I mean, you can probably attest to this, like starting a podcast and starting YouTube has been probably the biggest thing for me as far as introducing me to different people and more people, you know, like, it kind of gives you a reason to go out and, you know, discuss things and actually be able to speak with people that are way further ahead of you than in the industry and know more than you, which has kind of helped me a lot. And that's the thing too, like what you're saying. So how many of your, I guess your, customers are, would be coming from your podcast. Usually they're probably going to hear of you from your podcast first, I would imagine, and then funnel into, as a customer then, right?
Yeah. Most of the time people have heard of the podcast or they just started listening to the podcast and, or they've been listening for a long time and they're finally in a place where they are ready to, you know, say, okay, well, we want to, you know, hire you for consulting and for these issues, right? Large or small. There have been a couple of times I've been surprised that people just Google searched coffee consulting and they liked my website. And I was like, okay, because I'm the harshest critic when it comes to like what I put out there. And I'm like, my website, really? You know, that old thing. So that's been interesting, but most of the time comes from the podcast. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what I always think too. It's like the podcast is such a good funnel, you know, because it's one of those places where if you listen to 10, 15, 20 of your episodes, it's like you almost get to know you. So like you may not know the person coming to you, but they've done heard about, you know, issues you've had, how long you've been in it, like how long you started and everything like that. So it's like it gives them a chance to meet you before they actually show up and actually, you know, talk with you. And I think that's one of those things that kind of, you know, it pulls that guard down and it kind of gives somebody kind of a glimpse of who you really are and stuff like that. And you can only really get that through putting out so much content and having those, you know, just hours and hours of listening to somebody like you, or even like the Cat in Cloud, like you watch, you know, Cat in Cloud, the real Chris Bacchus videos and stuff. And it's like, mm-hmm. you never met him, but you almost feel like he's your buddy or something after watching a bunch of his YouTube videos, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's just one of them things, like it's so important, I feel, to, if you can have a podcast, create a podcast or something like that, create a little YouTube channel, or just get your content out where people can see you. Especially if you're doing like a service-based business like that.
Well, let me ask you then, cause I think this is true for me. As you've started to curate content and develop content, how has it impacted your thinking in terms of the decisions you make in your roastery and in your business, just the way you think about the industry in general?
It's honestly made me more confident in what I'm about to go do, because now, I mean, there's relationships that I've made that I never would have had without, you know, you call it what it is, like the numbers on Instagram or YouTube or through podcasts, like that funnels people into your, I guess your, you know, into your journey where like now I can reach out to a roaster that is a rep for Loring and like really get good information. You know, I can reach out to a local roaster beside me and now he's going to help me consult and open up my coffee shop. I can reach out to people who are doing way more in sales than I could ever imagine and have a really good relationship and get really good numbers from them. And it's like, I never would have been able to do that if I wouldn't have started like the podcast or the YouTube. Cause like, I don't know. It's that weird, I guess it's like what they call social currency. So I don't know. What do you feel about that?
No, that makes sense. Like it's on one hand, social currency is BS because you say like, you know me or I know you and all this stuff. Like we don't know Chris Baca. Like we don't, like people who listen to me, like they see a very curated version of me that I put out there, but I try to be vulnerable to a point where it's not weird. I say kind of tongue in cheek that it's BS in a sense that like when people, I like to beat this horse, when people win best, you know, coffee shop in their town, the local, the magazine or newspaper says like voted best. If you're not voted best, you're like, whatever. It's not, our true customers know we have fans, all this stuff. Well, when you win, you're just like, oh my gosh, what an honor. This is a, you just turn on a dime and you have to use that social currency as an introduction to prove that you have some substance to the shadow of who they think you are. So really your social reputation based on YouTube or podcasts and all this stuff, it's really not the substance of who you are. And I think maybe that's why consulting is also helpful, because it's like now the reality hits. It's not just, I can get behind a microphone here in my office, in my house in Kentucky, and it's easy to do it compared to having a relationship with somebody for even for a limited amount of time. So in one sense, we can't really bank on social currency to prove our values. We can bank on it to be a networking tool to introduce people to us in reality. And that's where the value is proved. That's where you have to be careful about what you put online, just as much as an owner has to be careful about what they tell their baristas they're going to do when they get in the shop. Like, this is who we are. We believe in these things. And all of a sudden they're like, I don't think you do.
Yeah.
Right. So anyway, that's my two cents on that.
Yeah. My biggest thing is, you know, you'll promise a video or a series in the future. And it's like, you know, weeks and weeks will go by and it's like, there's no way I can have the time to do all that. But then you promised it. It's been documented in video, whatever you made. So it's like I've learned a lot. Like I edit very carefully. Like whenever I'm going through, like if there's anything that I said that's kind of borderline, you know, did I promise too much? I'll just take it out, because I realize like where I'm at and stuff like that. Like I may not be able to accomplish everything that I'm saying in front of the camera sometimes, you know?
Well, you're thinking about it. You're thinking so much about your words. That's unique for a lot of people who are in the leadership space, especially. We can talk. I mean, I could talk and not take a breath for the next 2 hours. It's ridiculous. It doesn't mean I'm saying anything valuable. And having to curate content and think through, and even stumbling sometimes and being like, well, you know, I could have said that better or whatever. It introduces an element of mindfulness to the way that you communicate that I think really would help you in life in general. So for me, I spent so long in the industry. I spent so long just working, just doing the job, working and looking past where I was to figure out where I wanted to be. And in an episode called The Sleepwalking Barista, I kind of talked about this, where you can have complete blank spaces in your career where you just were showing up, but you weren't really paying attention. And what this does is it helps me pay attention, and it helps me almost do this autobiography of my experiences, where I'm like, I did learn that, didn't I? Wow. I went through it, and at the time I didn't realize that it was valuable, but here's somebody writing me being like, boy, that was a really interesting thing you said. Like, geez, okay. Maybe I could have gotten more from my career if I had just been practiced in sort of journaling or thinking about what's happening right now. So for me, that's one of the main benefits of doing this type of work.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. It's made me kind of more accountable. So it's like, you're saying you're going to do something, you're putting it out there, and then, but you have to take the steps to actually make it happen, you know, because there's a lot of people, and me included, like I do this all the time, where sometimes you get more enjoyment out of saying you're going to go do something and saying that's your goal,
yeah,
and actually making it to the goal. you know? So that's one thing I'm kind of, I want to put this series out for, you know, building out my coffee roastery and cafe, but it's like, I don't want putting out the videos and the stuff like that to get in the way of actually taking the steps. I don't want it to become a, I'm more excited to tell you about it than I am to actually go do it. So I'm actually kind of rethinking how am I going to put it out, if I'm going to make the videos and put them out at a later point, because I don't want them kind of messing me up or hindering what I'm trying to do. Do you ever feel like that, like where you're putting out information and stuff like that, or, you know, you're wanting to do something more and say you want to do it than actually doing it, if that makes any sense?
Oh yeah, of course. Yeah. I feel like, one of the illusions that I think people can have around maybe me or anybody who espouses a certain virtue on a platform is that we have a perfect practice of those things in our private and, you know, professional lives. And that's just not the case. So I find myself challenged by my own words 90% of the time. You know, there are things I've learned. It doesn't mean that, you know, I have then therefore overcome them in total. So having that, like wanting, this is why you get like super young online gurus talking about building wealth and stuff, and they're not even wealthy. You know, right. They're not even doing the stuff that they're not even doing the stuff that they're like talking about. Or they're talking about leadership and overcoming challenges, and the biggest challenge they had was, you know, spilling Taco Bell on their pants in their car, you know. So it's hard to. That's why I'm glad I did this. After, you know, now that I'm 43, like I have at least some scars to prove that I've learned some things, but I'm still learning. And one of the things I'm learning is exactly like you say, like, you can talk about it, but you got to be careful that you don't get so self-satisfied that you don't do it in reality. Yes. Especially if it's something that's good for your family, good for your, really, what is it that you're in business for anyway?
Right.
So yeah, you have to keep that in mind. And I think that'll keep you humble and honest. And maybe it means less content. You know, I've been thinking about this as the show grows, like how much more can I do before it becomes a real problem, you know, and I have to start outsourcing stuff, but then it costs money to do that. And I don't know when I want to make that step to do it, because it means a step back. And so there's this dialogue that you have to have in, and I know this is not necessarily on point of your question, but to answer it directly, yes. All the time, you know, I'm going to clean the grout, or like I was supposed to take grout out of the shower from my wife requesting it the last year. Yeah. Like, and I just keep looking at it being like, it's not that bad.
Yeah.
And I'll do it. I think I'm going to do that next month. I say it and I'm like, man, this will score some points. You know, my intention is good. But the action is actually a little bit better than the intention. So.
Yeah, I think that's kind of one thing that I'm definitely been thinking a lot here lately, you know, because like I have promised a lot of stuff on YouTube and stuff like that. And it's like, you know what, just focus on doing it and then basically document what you're doing. Don't tell what you're going to be doing and then get the gratification of telling it and then never do it. And I think that's what definitely one thing I don't know, I feel a lot of people do on Instagram, you know, they post about something and then like, you know, they get the whole, you know, the hits from it, the likes or whatever, and then you never see anybody actually do anything with it. So yeah. Something I kind of want to, I don't know, I may make a video on here pretty soon, because a lot of people, you know, you want to start a coffee roast, you want to start a coffee shop. Well, you know, a lot of people, you have the idea, but how do you follow through with it? You know, and I think that's something probably where your consulting and stuff comes through as well. Like, I feel that's the hardest thing whenever you have an idea of like starting a coffee shop or a coffee roastery. You know, what are the steps that it takes to actually make it happen? And like, well, let's go into that. So, you know, say you want to start a coffee roaster or a coffee shop. Like,
Yeah.
Is there a cookie cutter path that you have to kind of follow, or is it kind of like, you know, it's going to be different for everybody, or are there some principles that you're just going to have to, that everybody's going to have to face?
Yes and no. So the cookie cutter or path that everyone has to face has to do with things like build out.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily need a business plan, although I do recommend people just do it as an exercise, unless you're actually trying to get money for your build out and starting the shop. If you're getting a loan, you really do need one. But if you're not doing a business plan, even before the build out, you really need to have a plan for what you're going to do in the coffee shop. And I don't think people really think that through. They just know they want one. How hard could it be? So those are a couple of things that you're going to have to go through. Hiring. You're going to have to go through, you know, choosing the menu and what you want to serve and the sizes and pricing it appropriately. There's all sorts of things that everybody is going to go through. If you built your business on templates, so if you just got all the recipes, basically just kind of like a crowdsourced franchise is how a lot of people do coffee shops. There's not a lot of introspection happening. There's just a lot of collecting stuff, you know, like a magpie. You're just like picking things up. You're just bringing them back to your nest and you're like, I'll do something with it. And that's why a lot of coffee shops fail, is because there's no real root of personality or no real plan in it. And so people get caught up in the collection of information. And I say this on the podcast, sometimes I'm like, maybe you need to take a break from listening to me if you're not actually trying to do some of the stuff that you're hearing, you know,
right.
That's fine. I will organize my desk instead of do what I know I need to do that I'm dreading to do. Right. And for coffee shop entrepreneurs, that might look like the design of the front facade of their bar, you know, hours and hours, like going and vision boarding all this Pinterest stuff. I want it to be corrugated metal. No, I want it to be, you know, reclaimed timber. And, you know, all the while you don't have any policies written down about how people are going to function in the shop. And you're so worried about these superficial things, and you're not realizing that you're spending a lot of time because you don't know how to enter into the real meaningful things, and you're scared to do it. And so most of the time when I'm talking to people about this, when we're first starting out, they say, well, I want to open in 2 to 3 months. I'm like, let's make it 5 to 6 if we can. Let's just double the amount of time that you're thinking, unless they come to me and they're like, yeah, we're going to try to open in about a year and some odd months. And I'm like, I love you. I just thank you for saying that. It's different for everybody. You might have already signed a lease and now you've got to be in there because they're going to start charging you rent. They might have given you like 2 or 3 months of rent and now you've got to make it happen. But the steps to opening a coffee shop are universal when it comes to what physically makes up a coffee shop, with the operations, the quality control, and the people. But underneath each of those categories are very unique and nuanced conversations that need to happen, you know, along the way, or else it's just going to, you're going to open your doors and you're going to not know what to do. You're not going to know why you're doing it. And it'll be easy to fold after that. So that's the answer, I guess, is yes and no. There's some universal truths, but there's also a lot of time that's needed for developing the right path for your shop.
Yeah. Cause that's what I've been thinking here lately. Like, cause I have this huge list of order of operations. So kind of like you're saying, like where I'm not stuck on what the door looks like and, you know, I'm not working on an employee handbook and my, you know, how that procedure is going to be. So I got this huge list of order operations and how I'm going to try to start tackling things from what has to happen, what needs to happen, and when it needs to happen, versus figuring out the color of the door, which, you know, I could do the day before it opens. So it's like, I'm trying to work through this whole order of operations, and it's, I'm almost to that point now where, and when I say template, I'm just like the necessities, you know, you're going to have to hire, you know, you're going to have a bar, you know, you're going to have to eventually open the doors. So like, if the decision that I'm trying to make does not directly impact like opening or basically getting the coffee shop ready, then I feel it's almost like noise. And I'm trying to, in the order of operations that I have listed out, remove that part of it. That way I can actually focus on taking the steps to get to open the door on the first day. And for me, it's just like that task has been so hard, just trying to think through, walk through, when do I need to purchase the roaster versus when will it actually arrive? And then when it actually arrives, all the hookup, what's that time frame look like? And it's just trying to guesstimate all these timeframes. Yeah, it's overwhelming. You know, it's like, I understand why people have like consultants for all this stuff, but it's just, geez Louise, it's so, it's definitely, it's time consuming, and you definitely have to enjoy the process. And like you're saying, like if your purpose is just to like make some money and to get out of your day job, then I mean, I would have probably already quit by now, but my purpose for it now is, you know, kind of like what you were saying, I think earlier with the, you know, the reason I want to create the content, the YouTube channel and the podcast and stuff, and have the cat cafe and the roastery, is I want to create a place for, you know, education where people come and learn, people can learn about, I don't know if I'm going to always keep it just strictly coffee. Eventually I do want to kind of go into more of the business aspect and lifestyle aspect, because to me it's not just coffee and it's not just a cafe or a roastery. It's like, what are you trying to build and grow, and then also how are you trying to give back with it, you know? So I would love to eventually get more coffee farmers involved and stuff like that, and I think that's where the drive comes in. It's not just about opening a coffee shop, it's about who are you going to be able to help and how are you going to be able to help going forward with it, you know?
You bring up a really good point with the long-term planning and mission behind what you're doing. And there are two things happening here, potentially for you, because you're in this place right now, but also for other people. We just have to get it open. So you put quotes around that. I bet you every coffee shop, you know, eventual owners thinking, we just have to get this thing open. Once it's open, oh my gosh. But here's the thing, and this is no slight to anybody who's gone through the process of opening a coffee shop. It's difficult, but technically anybody can do it if they've got money. It's what you do after you open the doors. It's what you've planned on beyond, like, how are you going to operate as an owner operator in the first year, the second year? What does it need to look like operationally right now in order to make that a reality? How do you take care of your customers and your staff? What needs might they have in the first 2 months versus the last 2 months of the first year you're open? We do a lot of financial forecasting, especially because we have business plans that require like a 3-year projection of what you're going to make. And we're just like, oh, we'll make less, a lot, you know, a lot, tons. But then we don't do any kind of, you know, culture forecasting or operational forecasting, and the needs of the business that are really going to wring you dry if you don't have plans for it are those things. Because like I said, you can just get open and you're open. Now what? That's when a lot of people realize, oh crap, I'm actually working the bar too much to develop these things now. And that's why we start developing them early in a consulting relationship, for example, starting with values, starting with who's doing what, why are they doing it, where are they doing it, who's keeping them accountable for that stuff,
right?
It going down the line, because again, you could get that stuff done pretty quickly. Staffing is one of those big things that really is the biggest headache that you see people have, is, you know, managing people, leading people. So a lot of time needs to be spent in that area too. So, I think the point is, like, you have long-term plans, then the first things that need to be focused on are what needs to be true right now in order to facilitate that way in the future. So I talked with somebody who's going to be on the show pretty soon named Thalion Tremaine, and he is the president of a cooperative called Pachamama in California, but it's not California based. It's a cooperative that's entirely farmer owned. So he works for farmers. They roast in the States, and it's a cooperative that's flipped the ownership model on its head. And they won Best Business Model for SEA Sustainability Awards last year as well. His comment in that episode was that when they started, I mean, have you ever heard of Pachamama first?
I haven't. I was going to look them up.
Yeah. Yeah. And I ask you that because I was fairly confident you didn't, because most people, I'd say they know about, you know, other organizations that are doing like fair trade or, you know, farmer equity business models. But Pachamama was building this for 16 years. It was started by farmers, and they've just been doing the work. They've been building it. And they said, Thalion said, we built it with the intention of, you know, this is going to take 100 years. Like, can you imagine today thinking, well, this coffee shop is going to pay off in 15 years,
right?
20 years.
Long-term mindset.
I have, you know, I've heard people talk about how, man, it's so long that, you know, they've been open like 3 or 4 years, a couple of years, and they're just like, oh, we're so tired, you know. And I'm not saying you're not tired, but I'm also saying there is a long-term strategy that would have made you less tired if you had started with anticipating that long-term payoff, and you'd have a more solid business if that was true. Like when I started this podcast, not that it's a coffee shop, but I said, I'm not going to do this as a project because it's just fun. This is something I will do till I die. That's the only way I'm going to justify the amount of time it's going to take to do this, is I'll do it forever,
right?
Unless I can't. And so that helps me when I'm tempted to be like, oh, you know,
right,
the work and all that. So,
yeah, I've heard that too. Like, you know, usually it's around the 10-year mark where you got to put in about 10 years, whether it's videography, whether it's comedy, anything acting, what you're going to be doing the work for about 10 years before finally, you know, eventually you get a break or something like that. And all of a sudden somebody thinks, oh, you know, you're overnight success. I don't know if you ever heard of like Peter McKinnon, but it's the same thing. Like, these guys will put in so much time doing videography or something, and then finally they start a YouTube channel and they blow up. And it's just like, well, he didn't just blow up overnight. He's been doing videography and making videos for 10 years, you know,
yeah,
like for a different company. You just didn't know him then. And I feel that's how a lot of people want that instant success. And I mean, our society has kind of created that, but I equate a lot of things because I like to run and ultra running. Like, you can't start out on a 50 or 100 mile run at your fastest pace. You have to plan it out, and you have to put nutrition out along the way. You have to plan out your meals. It's like you have to kind of plan out how you're going to sustain this long endeavor. And I feel that's kind of the same way with business. Like, kind of have an attack plan where between now and when you open, you're going to spend this much, but you've got to have so much set aside because you don't know what's going to happen once you start. And you can open, get 6 months in and not have the capital flowing through, and cash flow kills you. And then what? You know, all this work was kind of for, you just got a good education out of it. So I don't know. It's like, it's just kind of planning. And kind of like you said, like, you definitely got to plan really long term. And I think that's what a lot of people don't do nowadays. And it's kind of, even, yeah, I got to check myself too sometimes. Like, am I trying to do this too fast? And if I am, really think about it. Like, can you accomplish all this within 6 months or, you know, a year, what you're trying to do? Or should we extend it out over, let's chunk it up, you know, do this first, do that for a year or two, then add on this, and then add on something else. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, can you versus need, do you need to? I mean, you could have some space, and maybe you're building, Maybe you don't need to open, but you what we tend to do is create these artificial deadlines as accountability tools to ourselves. And we're really scared of breaking the code. It's like we've created a cult of one where we don't want to go against the leader, you know? So we just say, well, it's got to be open in 4 months. And there's no question about it, because we're scared if we don't get it open in 4 months, then it's never going to be open. I mean, if it won't be open after 4 months, then maybe you shouldn't have started it.
Right.
You know?
Planning it wrong.
Exactly. Yeah. You might have been planning it wrong, but you have to give yourself the time you need to do it right. And I get it. Accountability with deadlines and things like that, that's great. but they are not supposed to be like, they're not supposed to be constraints that, you know, show up as dysfunction later on.
Right.
They're there just to motivate you, not to hold you back.
Right. And that's my biggest fear too. Cause like, you know, going back to the running analogy, like if you don't plan accordingly, then, and you start off too fast, or, you know, you didn't hydrate well enough beforehand or whatever, like you're ultimately, you know, something's going to happen on mile 40 or 60. It's going to keep you from reaching your goal. And I feel the same thing is, you know, with the cafe or the roastery, open up a coffee shop. Like I know there's, you know, things that if I don't do correctly, then it will ultimately lead to, you know, for like, you know, just not being able to make it happen, failure or whatever. Mm-hmm. So it's like finding those things that will hinder that success, and finding them early enough where you can kind of fix them or remove them out of the way. And I think that's another, you know, as far as like consulting and stuff, you've seen enough businesses fail where I haven't. Like I haven't seen too many coffee shops, you know, go out of business. The ones that are in town have, you know, pretty much been there since I was, you know, young. So I don't know. That's the other thing too. Like what do you see as like the biggest impediment for somebody starting out? What makes them, you know, for lack of a better word, just fail months or even like a year or two down the road?
I think there's two types of fail. There's closing the store fail, and right. Then there is staying open, but hating it and everyone hating you fail.
Okay.
So we see, you know, there's a lot of people that go out of business because they started it as a hobby, or they thought it was really cool. They wanted a community space. We don't have a coffee shop in this town. You know, go down the list of different, you know, sort of things we've said to, you know, our significant others over the table. What I see a lot is people, first of all, underestimate just how much their job is going to be about people. You are never really in the kind of position, unless you've been a camp counselor and a leader in another kind of service-based format in your past, where you're now in charge of a group of young, usually young 20-somethings, under stress, serving the public, something that you just learned how to do a few months ago. That's just imagine that. I mean, that's a lot of stress.
Yeah, it's
most people
scary.
That open coffee bars, they just don't have any coffee experience.
Right.
And the reason why you see that is because a lot of people who work in coffee, they see just how hard it is to do it right. And they're like, I don't want to open a coffee bar.
Right.
What is the fool's rush in where angels fear to tread or something like that?
Right.
I'm not saying that baristas are angels. I'm just saying that they're maybe a little bit more wise, and you should ask yourself a question. Why aren't more baristas opening coffee shops? So you really have to focus on who you're going to be and what your role is when you first start, because people don't do that. Then they just start having all this stress. They never think it's them, by the way. They never think that it's maybe they're being overbearing. Maybe they're terrible at communication. They're just henpecking people to death. You see all kinds of manifestations of shifting blame. And then all of a sudden it's about the market of, you know, can't get good people. It's hard to hire people. And it might just be that you have a reputation of being a real crappy employer. And all of this stuff really does happen underneath the nose of operators. They can't sense it. They're so mired down with quarterly taxes, keeping the place open, that the answers just can't make it in. So people problems starting with person problems, like the leader, is probably the number one reason why coffee bars go up. Undercapitalization's typical. People just try to bootstrap it, and they don't have a runway. COVID showed this, you know. Yeah. A lot of places closed because we just don't have enough money to stay open when no money's coming in. The other thing that causes people to go out of business or to create a scenario where they might as well be in business, it's like their coffee bars this weekend at Bernie's thing, you know,
right?
Is they, going back to what I said earlier about crowdsourced franchising, you basically just collect a bunch of ideas that don't have any cohesion. There's no consistency to it. It's just a trend-based offering, and it's so filled with just like a thrift store style trend shop.
Right.
It just becomes a storage unit for just screeds of ideas that you've had in the shower, you know, in a trade show. And then you put it all together and it just looks weird.
Right.
But you're forced to put on this face like, no, this is who we are. No, we're just funky. We're just eclectic. Or people are just like, well, I just don't want to be there. And I'm just a little intimidated by thousands of items on the menu. And this is the kind of thing that you see with new businesses often, because they don't know where to go. So they go to the brightest shining lights out there, which, you know, marketers are good at doing. They're good at saying, you have to have this product. You have to have, it has to be this, you know, certain way, or else it's not true. Or, I mean, this is half of the reason why, I'm not saying paninis aren't good, but I don't think I've ever eaten a panini in my life unless it was in a coffee shop. Like, I think that's where paninis have gone to permanently rest, and they just won't go away. So it's just so and the same thing, well, I would say with muffins, but so I guess the idea there is you don't want to just get on this train of trends, and you don't want to underestimate the amount of work it's going to take with people, around people. And for those two reasons, I think people go out of business, because customers get bad service from people who don't like working there because they don't like you. And then they also feel slightly confused, and rightfully so, because there's way too much to choose from and it's all half-heartedly done, you know,
right,
when we're banking on just the flashiness of it to get us through. So there's a couple of reasons right there.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with that. And I think, I don't know where I got it from. It was probably from some book or whoever I read, but I kind of follow like a 3-year rule now, where if I have an idea to start a coffee roastery or a coffee shop, I want to give it like 3 years. And if I still want to do it after 3 years and it's not like a hobby, and if it's something that I've been actually reading about, pursuing, creating content on, you know, which like for the coffee shop and coffee roaster, that's kind of what I've been doing. After 3 years, I'm like, you know, it's not just a fad for me. It's not just something like, you know, like I've pretty much since I started running back in the military, I've been running ever since. It's not something that's been a start and stop. So I feel after 3 years, I feel if you still want it, like that's when you should probably go ahead and dive in and take that leap. But I do feel a lot of people who start off, you know, they have an idea on Monday and are wanting to create the business on Friday and, you know, start a coffee shop, I could definitely see where that fad or the hobby kind of runs out. Yeah. And yeah, I didn't even think about that. So that probably is a lot of people who do that and then, you know, wind up having to shut down, close down the store or whatever. Real quick, moving in. So if you had to do it all over again, would you start out with the content earlier, like with the podcast and everything like that? Or do you feel the years of working in coffee and stuff like that kind of gave you the ability to speak more kind of educated when it comes to the podcast and everything like that?
I for sure don't think I should have started it earlier. No. And I think it's exactly what you say. it started when it needed to.
Yeah.
I had the idea to do it. It felt like the right time. I had, you know, been a voice in the industry before in certain ways. I'd gone through, you know, winning, you know, different trophies and competitions like Latte Art, or being a finalist in the USBC and being a part of that like early third wave crowd. And I kind of disappeared into work. And after I got married, I just kind of like bounced around and worked in places. If I had just said, well, this is my meal ticket early on, and said, I'm just going to continue to force myself on as a consultant, because I used to try to be a consultant, you know, but really what I was a barista mercenary, you know. Just like, I have a title, pretty impressive, right? You could have me at your shop teaching you a little thing about latte art. It's not really the same.
Right.
So there's a lot of edges of my personality that have been worn off in the right places. You know, you got to have an edge somewhere. And my perspective is, I think I have more humility today towards the work than I did before. So yeah, I'd say I'm glad that the content started when it did. And if anything, I wish that I would have been maybe just journaling or paying attention to things as they were happening and trying to make sense of them more than trying to do the postmortem report right. on it over a podcast in some ways.
Right. Yeah, I definitely agree there. It's like everything kind of has their steps in life, and you know, you have to go through those periods to get you to the next step. And it's kind of like with my journey, it's like, I don't try to claim to be no guru. Like, I want to speak to the gurus and share their information. I want to speak to the coffee farmers and share, you know, their stories and stuff like that. But I mean, I'm continually learning, like, as far as like, you know, for the coffee roastery side, the coffee shop side, like, it's this next year or two is going to be such a huge investment in education on the business side, on the coffee side, that I'm actually probably more excited about that than I am almost of even opening, you know, like the process of getting the opportunity to kind of learn everything on the coffee side and the business side of it. I'm almost more excited about all the little small steps than even the future goal of actually getting it done. You know, I don't know if you ever feel like that with some of your podcasts or whatever like that, but I don't know. It's you're kind of creating that synergy and basically getting to a point where you enjoy everything that you're doing, which is basically bringing you closer to what you eventually want to do, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, for sure. I think also that the more you go on, it's less about how the thing itself or the work itself brings you enjoyment. It's more about how you can extract enjoyment from it.
Right.
So there's a less passive approach to it, more of an aggressive, like, I'm going to find the good and I'm going to find the enjoyment and the joy in this, rather than just, you know, saying, just wash over me. I just want it to come to me. And,
right,
you know, people approach their careers that way sometimes, where they just want their boss to provide them almost like a surrogate parent, you know. Right. Everything they need for being a happy person. It's just like, no, I think a lot of that is on you.
Right. Exactly. And I think just getting to experience that journey, like I was thinking about buying a coffee shop or a coffee roaster. And then, but it's like, I want the experience of building it out and going through the whole process of, you know, cutting your teeth on it and learning the build out, the, you know, just everything of it. And I think that's so for some people, I think it's important. And then for others, maybe it'd be better to go a different route. But what is your opinion on building versus buying?
So if you buy a place, I've had a client do this. They bought a place in Las Vegas. Name is Bungalow Coffee now. The place that they purchased went out of business because of COVID. It was only open like for 2 or 3 months, and it's downtown Las Vegas. It's really good location, I think. They purchased this, and they knew that what was going to need to be done was not only rebranding, but an investment into rebuilding trust. So if you're purchasing a place, it's probably because it's not doing well.
Right.
Or the owner just wants to get out of it. And by that time, there's likely going to be some, there's going to be some stuff that fell behind the fridge that's just been festering. And when you pull out the financials and when you get the exit interviews and you realize, you know, when people get burned out, they stop really running their space. You're right. going to be purchasing some kind of dysfunction that you need to be prepared for, just like purchasing a used piece of equipment, you know? So if you think about it that way, there are some pieces of equipment that are well loved, well cared for. They're just, you know, we're upgrading, you know, we really do want to, you know, do something else with our lives. It's not that I'm burned out. It's just, we're moving on to something else. Think right. about it like that. Like, here's the preventative maintenance schedule that we've been keeping on this business or this machine. That makes me feel better about purchasing a used machine.
Right.
It doesn't mean that it's going to be like a new one, but it, you know, it does cut out some of the work for you, because in terms of money, how much it costs you. So if you're purchasing a business, you have to look out for that. And you also have to look out for the reputation that the business has. So if it wasn't a good reputation, you got to do better than them. You can't just go in there and be like, good, I'll just be the owner and I'll just do the same stuff. I'll keep the same staff and I'll just chug along. You're going to have to make some changes. It's not this easy street thing. And if you, sometimes I have clients or people who want to be clients who have a little bit of, and through no fault of their own, I think, because they're not in the business, they might have some naive assumptions about what it's going to be like or how to start. And I just say, well, call me back in a year or so after learning more about it. You know, like, this isn't the right opportunity or right time. So when you're purchasing, yeah, you might have to make up for that reputation, not just with good coffee, but with goodwill and consistency. Right. So when you start by yourself, though, when you start something new, the benefit there is that you get to set the tone right from the beginning.
You got a blank canvas.
Exactly. Right. You can build what you want on it. And there might be it might be harder because you don't have a set customer base that's used to that place being open, but it's just kind of a give and take. So it depends on what you're signing up for, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of what I've been kind of thinking too, just, I don't know, going back and forth with that. So, really kind of wrapping it up then, what is your goal with the podcast and consulting, and what do you see, where do you want to be in like 5 years or so with everything?
I think my goal is pretty much the same as it's been, which is I want to provide a platform and information, that will help people run better coffee shops, open better shops, run their careers better in the coffee shops, so that the retail industry, this last link in the value chain, right, is healthier. We can count on consistency from coffee shops that are built well, where people are taken care of. If a farmer is relying on us to consistently roast and serve their coffee, then we've got to put in the work and we've got to, you know, make sure that we're doing our due diligence to stay, not just stay open, but to really provide something that's, you know, tremendous and has long-term potential, because that's what's needed right now in the industry. So I think I just want people, I don't want people to have to make these kinds of mistakes, the ones that I made or some of the ones that my guests have made. They don't have to. You're going to learn, but there's going to be hardship. But I want people to have to go through hardship that is no fault of their own as much as possible. I want people to be happy being owners. I want them to be happy being customers and staff of these businesses. And when you see all three of those happen, everyone's happy. all the way, you know, upstream in the value chain. And I think that's really, you know, the goal for everything.
Right. Yeah. And I think if you can improve the coffee shops around here, I mean, it's just going to kind of help all the ships rise. You know, the better we can make coffee, the more you can kind of pull in people into the specialty coffee, you know, world. And the other thing too, you know, kind of going back with like your podcast, like in the 3-year rule, like if you can listen to your podcast, I mean, and you can literally probably listen for 3 years now, and you will learn so much in that period. And you have to, I feel, you know, take that time to actually listen, read, and do all your research in that period, because that period is going to really give you like the good and the bad and the ugly. And I think that's one thing too, whenever you're starting up, like you have to put in that time of just going through a bunch of the education resources, stuff like that. And I don't know, and yours has definitely been a big help for me. And I don't know, I've always kind of, you know, appreciated it, because like I mean, some of your content is like so specific where it's not for everybody. And it's not like, and I've been in it for a little bit now with like the YouTube and stuff. Like I know what gets hits, and it's easy to talk about the things that gets hits, but it's harder to go and make a video or something on something so specific as like water quality or hiring practices and stuff like that, where, you know, you're probably not going to get the hits and stuff from it, but it's so beneficial to the people that actually need to hear it. And I think that's one thing for your podcast specifically, like you really dive into some of the details. So I think that's always been great with your podcast.
I appreciate that. You know, I've never really, I pay attention to numbers. I need to, but not to such a degree that, you know, it's controlling, you know, I over time, if you amass a certain amount of content, that content will be beneficial later on. I mean, talking about it now, like one of the worst performing episodes. I don't know if it was the worst performing, but I thought it was really interesting. Was, you know, freezer, ice machine, and refrigerator maintenance episode.
But that's the thing, like, you know, if somebody's really looking for that information, that's gold to them, you know?
Yeah. And that's the goal, is like you as a listener, I want to have a library of topics and content that eventually covers main and then subcategory topics within a coffee shop. Because again, the goal is what's underneath the watch face of a coffee bar that makes that thing go. There's a bunch of tiny stuff. There's a bunch of big and shiny stuff. Right. And we just kind of dive into all of it, and aggregate, it makes up the whole. And that's what the beauty of it.
Yeah. And that's the other thing too. You know, you listen to one and then it's like, well, you know, you see more and you just start diving down the rabbit hole. That's what happened to me whenever I first found you. So, heck yeah, dude. Do you have anything you want to kind of share or, wrap up with anything?
Just if people want to subscribe to the show, it's on all the major places you could listen to podcasts, Keys to the Shop, and keystotheshop.com is the website. You could also follow Instagram. The Instagram account is @keystotheshop. I'm going to try to start doing some merch out there. I've got like a really small run of like 30 tumblers that I'm going to put out. And then, you know, just, you know, continuing to do the content the way that I am, and we'll see what the next 5 to 10 years holds in terms of how that content is presented. You know, 560 episodes or so now is a big number, and I would like for it to be more accessible to people. So we'll see what happens.
That's so cool. And I'll link all your stuff below too, as far as like the Keys to the Shop website, all your socials and stuff like that. I'll link that in the show notes, and on YouTube, it'll be down in the description. So
awesome.
Chris, I appreciate you coming on, dude.
Rob, it's been awesome. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, buddy. Thank you so much for tuning into the Coffee Runs Deep podcast. I truly hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did. Chris is such a knowledgeable guest, and we are fortunate to have him in the coffee industry. To say I learned a lot from this episode is an understatement. If you are digging the podcast, please think about leaving a review and just making my day. That's literally all it would take. I'll see you in the next one. Later, Gator.